Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Verde Gallery, currently showing Alchemy and the Stones of Brittany, sculptures and encaustic paintings by Tony Putnam. Also featuring Stop Alice, an independent film showing October 8th and 9th at 7 p.m. Verde Gallery, a fine art gallery, cafe, and newsroom at 17 East Taylor, downtown Champaign. On the web at www.verdant-systems.com. Be inspired.
Cancer patients have a host of issues to deal with: treatment, stress, anxiety, depression. All of these may make it difficult to maintain healthy eating habits, which are vital to fighting illness. My name is Maeve Riley, and this is the Afternoon Magazine. Today, our topic is nutrition for cancer patients. My guest is Dr. Gerald Militello, one of the authors of Eating Well Through Cancer. Dr. Militello is a board-certified oncologist in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and has been treating patients for more than 20 years. I'd like to mention that his co-author, Holly Clegg, who will not be with us today, is the author of the Trim and Terrific Cookbook series, writes for cooking magazines, and is a frequent spokeswoman and consultant for healthy eating and lifestyles. You can join our conversation by calling 333-9455, that's 333-WILL, or toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Thank you, Dr. Militello, for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Mace.
Okay. It seems that one of the most difficult times for cancer patients in terms of nutrition is during chemotherapy treatments. Could you explain a little bit about how chemotherapy works?
Well, basically what happens when you take chemotherapy is people lose their appetite, and that's how this all came about. The most common presenting problem with every patient with cancer is, I don't know what to eat, and I just don't feel like eating anything. It messes up your senses and your taste buds. Things don't taste good. And when you take chemotherapy, it kills all the good cells as well as the bad cells. And when it kills the good cells, it's mainly the cells lining the GI tract. And that's part of the nausea, and then part of it is a central mechanism. But chemotherapy just attacks any cell that's rapidly dividing. That's why you lose your hair. That's why you have nausea and vomiting. And that's why your fingernails stop growing and your beard stops growing. Your hair starts, either falls or grows slower. And so that's the mechanism behind how the chemotherapy is working.
Okay, and you said GI, that's the gastrointestinal
the
tract?
The gastrointestinal tract, the esophagus and the stomach.
And what are some of the good things? You mentioned hair and fingernails and loss of growth, but what are some of the good maybe proteins or minerals that a patient might lose during chemotherapy?
Well, you lose, basically it's not so much that you lose them, it's just that you stop ingesting them, because you may go 2 or 3 days without taking anything in but liquids. And so you lose all the vital nutrients that you need, basically all of the proteins, vitamin B12, all your different vitamins. So we try and supplement everybody that's taking chemotherapy with a multivitamin. And then at least if you can take in these high-calorie drinks, mm-hmm. and there's Ensure Resource Boost. There are also fruit-flavored drinks like Breeze. And those are good. But basically you lose a little bit of everything when you're just not taking in anything. So it's a major problem with treatment.
That's right. And how did you meet Holly Clegg, and why did you decide to collaborate on a book like this?
Our children were friends, uh-huh. and I had been trying to find someone to do this book with me for 20 years, and everyone thought it was a bad idea. And it's just because I know what patients tell me when they come in. I just don't know what to eat. I don't know what to eat. And I met Holly and sat down with her one day. And the first time I spoke with Holly, she was not interested either. She said, I really don't think this is something people would want. And after we sat down again, and I said, I'm really interested, and you're the person to do it because I know how to do this. And now it's like her best book. And it's the most rewarding thing I think she's done as far as her cookbook. Her father was diagnosed with head and neck cancer right after we started writing the book, and he's found the book real helpful, and we get comments daily now from people. And it's basically low-fat, high-fiber, and that's what the American Cancer Society recommends now for patients. Low-fat, high-fiber, lots of fruits and vegetables, your grains. And the thing with cancer patients is that they, the week of treatment, they may not take a lot of anything in, and so they have to make up. It's hard to eat certain foods right after the treatment, but so that you can't worry about your cholesterol and all of that when you're taking the treatments. But what we did was divided the book up based on the side effects. If you have a sore mouth, these are foods that you can eat. If you have diarrhea, these are the types of foods you should eat. If you have constipation, and that really was more of a common sense thing. I just, from what patients complained to me about, and that's how we did it, and it's amazingly, it's just been great. I mean, I get positive feedback daily.
Yeah, I think that was really appealing about the book, how you divided it up into the separate sections, and they are day of chemotherapy, neutropenia, which is dry mouth, diarrhea, constipation, sore mouth, snacks and light meals, and then caregiver and healthy eating post-treatment.
Right.
And you also give suggested menus for pre, during, and post-chemo. And then you also have a cross-reference, which kind of lists all the recipes and tells, you know, what specifically they would be good for, whether constipation, diarrhea, sore mouth, or during chemo as well. So I thought that was really handy and a novel way to do it. So
right. If you spent several days working on that. If you have a sore mouth and diarrhea, these are the foods you can eat if you have diarrhea or neutropenic. And neutropenia is when your blood counts are real low.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Okay. And it's when the blood counts are low, you just need to avoid foods that are high in bacteria, like raw fruits and vegetables. Honey is a major source of bacteria. Honey is filled with Pseudomonas. And so if your blood counts are down and your immune system is either further suppressed, then avoiding raw fruits and vegetables is very beneficial. And that has been a real important point in this book.
And you said that neutropenia can last longer with certain forms of leukemia, and why is that?
Right. It depends on how long your blood counts stay down. And with leukemias, basically, we destroy all of the blood cells in the bone marrow, and it can take 2 to 3 weeks for your bone marrow to recover, whereas most of the chemotherapy we use in lung cancer, breast cancer, the blood counts will stay down for about a week and then they come back up. But with leukemia, you're dealing with a cancer of the bone marrow, so you basically try and destroy everything in the bone marrow, and it just takes longer to recover.
And when you talk about chemotherapy and someone may be nauseous or you know, just not feeling like eating at all, what's the most important thing about that in terms of nutrition and how to make sure that they get something to eat?
I think the hydration is the biggest thing. Even if they can't eat solid foods, if you can get liquids in, and that's when we really force the liquid supplements, high-protein malts, the Smoothie Kings, and we actually have a few recipes for similar drinks in the book. But that's the main thing, is the hydration. And you can only go so many days without eating, and then to the point where we'll actually have to hospitalize some of these people and feed them intravenously. But usually with the new nausea medicines we have now, people may go 2 or 3 days without eating, but then you can get them eating something. Mm-hmm. The snacks are real important, and changing your eating habits. And that's another important thing. When you have cancer and you're taking chemotherapy, it's seldom that you'll feel like eating 3 big meals a day. So we try and stress to patients that 6 small meals a day is far better than not eating. And you're not going to sit down and eat 2 eggs, bacon, sausage for breakfast. I mean, you might have a small breakfast and then at 10 o'clock in the morning, noontime, and it depends on the type of cancer. If you've had some sort of cancer of the stomach or the esophagus, you can only eat and tolerate small portions. So that's real important.
And you mentioned that you tell a patient they shouldn't have eggs or bacon, or, you know, in general, it seems to be most diets these days are, you know, the American Medical Association is saying those aren't good menus to have in general all the time anyway. And I found that your book kind of it would be good for a non-cancer patient as well in terms of proper dietary.
Right. It is. And that's the other thing. It's everything in the book is stuff that the whole family can eat out of. What we found is that patients didn't want bland foods with no flavor. We did actually surveyed about 200 patients with just questionnaires as to the type of foods they liked and what do you feel like eating when you're taking chemotherapy. And so a lot of the recipes we developed based on what patients told us they liked, although in South Louisiana, it's not spicy enough.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't see any Cajun recipes in there.
No, I've had a few people call wanting to know, well, there's no recipes for roux in there. You don't, and what about red pepper? And it's like, well, really, these aren't things. That was kind of funny. But, no, it's real important that you, I mean, if we could get people eating healthy, we could eliminate, I think, 50% of our diseases, not only the cancer, but heart disease. I was reading a paper just recently, and it's the National Cancer Institute has determined that about 1% of the American children meet all of the nutritional dietary recommendations as far as daily servings of grains, vegetables, fruits, and meats. 16% meet none of the recommendations. So we have a long ways to go, and preventive medicine, we could save this country so much money if we could get people to eat properly and stop smoking. We could put ourselves out of business. And I'm not sure why we aren't devoting more attention to this.
Let me reintroduce you to our guest here. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and we're talking with Dr. Gerald Militello, an oncologist and co-author of Eating Well Through Cancer. You can join our conversation about nutrition for cancer patients or just dietary concerns in general by calling 333-9455. That's 333-WILL or toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And I just wanted to go kind of through the sections here, and your sections on diarrhea and constipation, you know, they kind of go opposite each other, I guess. The diarrhea is to stop the intake of high-fiber foods and use stool softeners or laxatives if you need them. And, you know, I didn't realize that squash was such a low-fiber vegetable. I guess I should know that, but you had some good recommendations there, too.
Well, thank you. This was an educational experience for me in itself. I mean, when I was in medical school, nutrition played a minor. I think we spent about 3 hours talking about nutrition in the 4 years of medical school. I understand it's nutrition and palliative care are right there with the rest of the courses they teach now, which is great. But it was sort of a teach yourself. I mean, it just wasn't emphasized, which I'm still amazed. When you are what you eat, and that's the absolute truth.
Right. And now, for example, ginger, you say, is good for your stomach if it's upset and, you know.
Ginger actually is a great antiemetic.
And that means?
I'm sorry. It's for nausea.
Okay.
It stops nausea and vomiting. And actually, we don't have this, but our next book will have a recipe for candied ginger.
Mm-hmm.
Williams and Sonoma does sell candied ginger. A lot of the Vietnamese stores will sell, you can buy ginger. I'll send my patients there. You can get little ginger candies, but even ginger snaps. Licorice is another good source of a natural antiemetic that will stop you from having nausea. So these work real well, and these are all just non-prescription things that you can do. The biggest thing we find is that if you avoid the high-fat, greasy, spicy foods the day of and the day after treatment, you tolerate the treatments much better. If you stay hydrated with just water, you do much better. But so we go on and on to patients about trying to drink after a treatment. And I'm not sure exactly if it dilutes the chemotherapy or just what, but patients do a thousand times better if we can keep them well hydrated.
Right. So your book isn't just for, I mean, it starts with the chemotherapy treatment, but it goes throughout cancer treatments and post-cancer as well, talking about what kind of diet people should follow and I just wanted to ask, you were mentioning about nutrition, and how about nutritional supplements? You didn't really talk much about those in here, but I was wondering if you had done any research in that. And
none other than just multivitamins. Uh-huh. I did not, as far as picking one particular thing and saying that you need so many milligrams of this per day, we really didn't do that. And again, the American Cancer Society's recommendations are low-fat, high-fiber, five, and following the food pyramid, five fruits and vegetables per day, 7 to 8 glasses of water per day, keeping your red meat down to the size of a deck of cards once a day at the most. But as far as focusing in on one type of nutrient, we did not do that, and I know there are some diets out there and some books that are written specifically for one type of food. But we found that this was something that anybody could prepare and something the whole family could eat out of, because if you follow like the macrobiotic diets, you literally need a chef to prepare the thing,
yeah.
And you need a specialty store to buy all the ingredients.
Right.
I had one patient that was on the macrobiotic diet, and they literally, they had hired a chef to come into the house to do all the cooking, and it's almost impossible to follow. It is impossible to follow.
Yeah, we'll get back to that, because I think your book was pretty straightforward and used things that, you know, anyone would find in their cabinets.
Right.
But we do have a caller on line 1 from Urbana. Go ahead.
Hi, I was just wondering, have you done any research about soy? Because, you know, I try to follow the nutritional, but the things, you know, you hear such differing takes on soy, the benefits, well, you know, well, maybe it's not so good for you, and, you know, it's very confusing. So I'll hang up and wait for your answer about the soy.
Okay.
Thanks.
I think you need a certain amount of soy in your diet, but just the diet that just focuses on soy, I don't think is a healthy diet, but there are definitely some benefits to soy, and I think taken in normal amounts and not excessive amounts that it can be beneficial to you. I know I have a few patients who are doing soy milk. This is all they want to eat, and I don't think that's healthy. I mean, again, I think anything in excess is bad for you. You need a small amount of everything. And I think that's, again, it goes back to a common sense diet. But I don't think soy is bad for you if you just incorporate it into your diet, just like all the other foods.
And in terms of women's health, especially for breast cancer or for menopause?
I think it will help with some of the menopausal symptoms. And I actually have some patients taking soy products just because it does help, and I think as long as you limit your soy and don't do it in excessive amounts, I think it may actually be beneficial to you.
Okay.
A lot of the plant hormones will help with some of the menopausal symptoms that patients are having, and a lot of times we have patients on anti-estrogens, the tablets, we will recommend oil of primrose or change of life vitamins, and these will really help the symptoms. And I don't know of anything bad with those. I mean, it does make the symptoms a little easier to tolerate.
Okay, and in the book where you list, I guess, your co-author, Holly has a little description of each of the recipes, and then you have a recipe. And then at the bottom of many of the recipes, there's a doctor's note that kind of talks a little bit about what foods are in there and what vitamins they have and how that might help, which I think is very handy for someone looking
right.
for nutritional advice. And one of the things you mentioned is narcotic medicines. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about them. And I think it's on the section on constipation and how they affect the bowels. And
right. Most cancer patients, at some point, will either the drugs that we treat the cancer with will cause constipation, but the narcotics, which are used for pain control, will cause constipation. By basically, it slows the activity and the motility of the bowels. And so anytime you're on a narcotic, you really need to do something to help your bowel movements. Either take a stool softener, change your dietary habits, and whenever we prescribe a narcotic to a patient, the first thing we tell them is they need to start working on their diet as far as eating plums, pears, apples. And then again, if you have if you're neutropenic, you can't eat the fresh fruit, but that's only for a few days. But it's because the narcotics slow down the motility of the GI tract and causes the constipation. That's the mechanism behind that.
And part of this is getting patients to find something that they are interested in eating, too. And I just wondered, you know, that with the Nobel Prizes being awarded today in medicine, that they did a research on smell. And I wondered, you know, we know that taste buds are affected by chemotherapy and obviously what a patient would think tastes good or not. And I wondered if the smell of things is influenced at all by cancer treatments.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of patients, the smell of foods cooking in the house nauseates them. And one of the things that I tell patients is to try and eat dry foods with no flavor. I mean, just cooking onions or garlic in the house, the smell will nauseate them and they can't eat. And a lot of times bringing people foods, prepared foods, where all they have to do is heat them up, or cooking things that aren't as fragrant. And sometimes a few days after chemo, just eating sandwiches or baked potatoes, noodles and cheese, things that aren't real fragrant. But the smells definitely play a major role, I mean, in inducing the nausea.
Mm-hmm. And that was good, too. You have a section here for caregivers, and it's not just for caregivers, but people who might know someone who has cancer or a family member who has cancer. And like you mentioned, one of the things you suggest is people bringing them food because the smell of the food cooking in their home may not be pleasant to them. But I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that as well in terms of caregivers. And
well, one thing anybody that does suffer, a cancer patient is a caregiver, and a lot of people offer, but they don't know exactly what to do. And if you're going to bring dinner to someone, it's nice to bring it in disposable containers, bring the food that's already cooked, so all you have to do is heat it up. And for caregivers, just going to someone's house and letting them talk, it's real difficult to be around. Patients, family and friends find it difficult to be around cancer patients, and I'm not sure if they feel uncomfortable around them or if they feel their own mortality. But there's something about it. Patients tell me all the time, I find that I have new friends. Some of my best friends, I'm uncomfortable around, or they're uncomfortable around me. So you can do a lot for a person by just going to visit them and sitting there and listening to them. You don't have to say anything. All you have to do is listen. But preparing meals for people is one of the best things you can do. And just going there and even serving their meals one night. Go and read to patients. Some patients with the chemotherapy, they get watery eyes and they can't read. Just because, I mean, they can see and they can take care of themselves, but they can't read. And I saw two patients this morning who said, you know, the one thing I enjoyed in my spare time was reading, and I can't read because every time I pick up a book, my eyes start watering. And that's a great thing that someone could do for a patient. And we actually have volunteers that come into the hospital sometimes. We'll sit there and read the newspaper to patients. And so those things are real important. And actually, in the next book we're going to do, we're going to not only put in information for the caregivers, we're going to put a list of stocking your pantry. If you're going to prepare this, these are the things that you need to prepare this so that you can just copied and go to the grocery store and buy everything you need real quick. We find that most of the recipes in this book you can prepare in 30 to 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that takes a half a day. Anybody can do it. actually went to a dinner party the other night, and the people were so impressed because they had prepared everything for the party out of this book. And nobody believed it. They said, this is out of a cancer cookbook.
Well, it's more than a cookbook, like you said. You know, you have a holistic approach, I think, to healthcare in general, which is very good. We do have another caller from Urbana on line one, and then we'll get back to talking some more about that.
Okay.
Go ahead, line one.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm finding this program particularly timely because I have a friend who is indeed going through chemotherapy, and I have invited them to dinner. Is there a quote-unquote perfect time to invite the person to dinner? I've heard that the week off of chemo is really hell, and that the week on, the person actually feels better. And I'm real curious what you were just discussing in terms of what brings on nausea. Will you discuss the differences between those 2 weeks, please? And I'll hang up and listen.
Sure. The nausea is brought on by two mechanisms. Mainly, one is the central mechanism where the chemotherapy affects receptors in the brain to cause the nausea. The second is just irritation of the intestinal tract, the esophagus, the stomach, and that causes part of the nausea. What we are finding now is when patients take treatment, their worst day is about 3 days after the treatment. And, again, it's certain drugs that do this. They will feel bad for 3 to 7 days, and then the week prior to their next treatment, if they're on a 3-week schedule, that week prior to the treatment is a great week. They always feel wonderful. What happens is that between this, you may have the GI upset the first 4 to 7 days, and then around the 7th to 10th day is when your blood counts go down and you don't feel great. So the best time is either right after a treatment or the week before. If people are getting weekly chemotherapy like 5-FU and leucovorin, which is a big treatment for colon cancer, patients normally will have 1 or 2 bad days and then they feel good. So it depends on which drugs you're receiving. With some of the newer, bigger treatments we're given, the first 3 days are actually good days. Patients will take their treatment and go out that night. And then on the 3rd or 4th day, they have a bad day. And again, by the time the week before your next treatment is due is when you have that's another good time where you can entertain and go out and do things. And what I tell patients, even if you lose a few pounds, they may drop 1 or 2 pounds during 1 week of treatment, they'll pick them up the next week. So just make up for it. And even if there's only one food that you can tolerate, it doesn't matter what it is, go ahead and just eat that. Some patients can eat peanut butter. And peanut butter is actually high in protein, and it's actually similar to the protein that you get from meat. It's just that it takes a little longer to digest and to reach that state in the body, but it's actually one of the healthiest things, and cancer patients love peanut butter because it's easy to digest, it doesn't smell, and it's a great source of protein.
So in general, any chemo agent you're guessing will work, or you're saying will work around the same 3 to 7 days. Are there, I mean, depending on what chemo agent you're on,
right,
will that vary a great deal, or...
With the adjuvant treatments, like for breast cancer, the preventive treatments, most of those patients will follow the rule. They feel good the first 3 days, 4th day through the 7th day, they don't feel so great. And then after that time period, they usually start picking up, and each day they feel better. By the time it's time for another treatment, you feel great. But things have changed so much in just the past 3 years with the new antiemetics, the new nausea medicines that we have. Before, patients were sick. They would get sick before they came here, and it is so much better. That's the one big progress we've made in treating cancer patients is the nausea medicines. They're 1,000 times better.
And are there any side effects to those in terms of affecting someone's appetite? Or
Not really. I mean, some of them can cause headaches, but for the most part, not really. They don't knock you. They don't make people sleepy anymore. They don't sedate you like they used to. So they're... It's 1,000 times better than it. When I first started doing this, we would determine whether patients had nausea and vomiting 10 or 15 times. Now it's if they have nausea over two or three times, we're upset because we have the drugs are so much better.
Okay. And although this is a cookbook, like I said, you do promote healthy lifestyles in general, including exercise.
Right.
And you actually advise patients, you know, when they should exercise, depending on how they're feeling. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I think we're actually finding that exercise may stimulate the immune system, and it is very important that I recommend everybody do exercise, maybe not the day of treatment, but starting the day after and in between treatments, even if it's just walking. And we're actually in the process right now of setting up a program here in town in Baton Rouge to a wellness program for cancer patients so that every cancer patient can have some either Tai Bo or yoga, some type of physical activity. It really does make patients feel better. And when you're trying to convince a patient who's taking chemo and just doesn't feel well that you need to go out and do exercise, they look at you like you're crazy. But actually, this morning I had a lady in, and she says, "I can't believe it. I feel better now than I felt in 6 months. I've been going to the gym 3 days a week, and all she's doing is walking at the gym and doing the treadmill. And she said, my energy is actually better. No one could have convinced me that this was true. But it really is important, and we're finding more and more that exercise plays a vital part. So we're trying to get everybody involved in an exercise program from day one of treatment. And there are different things you can do. I mean, some people don't have the energy to get out and do any type of heavy physical exercise, but walking, yoga, things like this are equally as important.
Are there any times where you would advise a patient not to exercise?
If they're having trouble breathing or having chest pains, but for the most part, just a little, getting patients out of bed and moving around, there's more benefits. I don't know of any contraindications unless someone just had a surgical procedure and they literally can't do anything. The other thing with exercise is that it helps with bowel movements, the constipation. Patients that sit around and lie in bed all day long have major problems with constipation. Just getting up and walking a few steps will help that out tremendously. And it improves their appetite, and it just makes them feel better. So I think it's a major thing that a major part of treatment is to keep patients exercising.
I noticed that you didn't include a section on surgical foods to have before or after surgery or during or after radiation, and I wondered if there were different foods, or would the foods in this book or recipes in this book cover those times as well?
They would cover more of the radiation. We really didn't do a lot with surgery just because that's a whole different ball game. We didn't include anything with surgery, but the radiation, mainly the sore mouth, and the diarrhea and constipation are the three chapters that would affect the radiation patient. The sore mouth section is real important with the radiation patients. And then the diarrhea. A lot of patients getting radiation to their GI tract have problems with diarrhea. So those chapters blend in more with the chemotherapy.
Okay. And I know my father, when he was ill, he was on steroids and had a real penchant for sweets, and he was a man who never ate sweets before he got ill and was on steroids. But you have a lot of, we gave him milkshakes all the time, but I like how this selection of sweet foods in here are healthy sweet foods.
Right.
And I wonder, are there any of those that you actually have tried and liked?
In the book, actually, that's a death by chocolate cake.
Uh-huh.
The best recipe in the book is the fruit pizza.
Okay.
I think it is absolutely wonderful, and I think that's in the high fiber section. It's a tropical fruit pizza. It's absolutely wonderful. There's a cold chocolate. It's an icebox.
Chocolate cake?
Chocolate cookies, I think.
Okay.
That are wonderful. But the tropical fruit pizza, to me, is at the top of the list of all the things in the book. There's a strawberry shortcake that's easy to make and absolutely wonderful also.
Well, you mentioned easy to make, and I think we talked about this, and you said in your next book you're planning to have a section on what to get to keep in your pantry to stock up.
Right, and actually have a little, at the end of each recipe, just a list of these are the items you need to prepare this, so that if someone wants to go to the store for you, this would be great for caregivers. You can just copy them 3 pages of the book, and this is what I want to eat. And we did do a little bit of menu planning, but not as much as we wanted to. We were just sort of trying this out. And that's been very helpful because patients, they don't know what to eat. Mm-hmm. And everything, it's nice if you don't have to think about it. You want it as easy as possible. And it's nice for family members that are taking care of the patients. But the one thing I stress is that everybody can eat out of this book. It's not people open it up and freak out when they see the index, constipation, diarrhea, sore mouth. I called Holly Clegg one night, and her husband answered the phone, and I said, "What are y'all doing?" He said, "Don't ask. We're eating constipation food tonight." I said, "Just shut up and eat. It won't hurt you. Yeah. It'll do you good." But that's one nice thing about this. And if once people can get past the title of it, it's great when they get into it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I didn't have time over the weekend to try any of these out, but I'm planning to keep this cookbook and try some of them out because they all look really...
There's a tuna salad in it that's wonderful.
Okay, we'll
try. There's a tuna pasta salad that's great. There's a chicken recipe with... it's a shrimp. It's a shrimp casserole that's wonderful. There is the spinach Florentine is great.
Okay.
The carrot souffle is excellent. So far, I haven't tried anything.
Have you tried all of them?
We've tried quite a few of them.
Okay.
Because as we were preparing this, we would, if I didn't cook them, Holly would cook them, and we would bring, and I was not a great cook. I mean, I make bread. That's my claim to fame. I make bread every weekend.
Uh-huh.
But Holly and I prepared a lot of these. The shakes, the peach weight gain shake was one of the things we played with. And there's a baked peach delight, which is great. That's simple. It's good Thanksgiving food. So it's got a little bit of everything in it. It's just not, for South Louisiana, it's not quite spicy enough.
Well, you do have a lot of shrimp in it, and I thought that would be more applicable to people in Louisiana probably than in the Midwest. So.
Probably so, yes.
Yeah, and I'll just read the tuna pasta salad, what some of the ingredients are there for some of our listeners.
Uh-huh.
Packaged tri-colored rotini, fresh broccoli cut into florets, medium tomatoes cut into chunks, pitted ripe olives, an onion cut into thin slices, a can of solid white tuna in spring water, balsamic vinegar, lemon juice, water, olive oil, Dijon mustard, and pepper. So in that recipe, you say you have a good source of protein and fiber, vitamins A and C, and broccoli, too. So that's also an anti-cancer agent.
Right.
And so you're covering all the bases here.
We try to. I mean, that is a great salad, too. I think it's the balsamic vinegar that really adds to it. The no-bake cookies were the ones I was looking for.
Okay.
And there's actually a trifle in there, and I'm not sure... It's with bananas and whipped cream. That's excellent also, and easy to make. I mean, it's 10 minutes. You can throw it together.
Right.
Holly and I prepared this the other day at a talk we gave here in town.
And I just wondered, you don't talk about alcohol, though some of the recipes do have alcohol ingredients in them, and I wondered if you could comment on alcohol and cancer patients.
Well, alcohol in small amounts... won't even patients taking chemotherapy, I will tell them that they can have a glass of wine 2 or 3 times a week, or they can have one mixed drink or maybe one can of beer. It's just alcohol every day isn't healthy. And what we did, actually, in a lot of the recipes, alcohol is an optional thing. Mm-hmm. Especially we figured if family members were eating this and weren't taking treatments, but the thing with chemotherapy is most patients lose their taste for alcohol, so it's really not a problem. It's not like they're craving alcohol. I have had very few, even the alcoholics that are taking treatments, they just lose their taste for it. So it's not, I think in small portions, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, 1 or 2 cans of beer a week or 1 or 2 glasses of wine will not hurt you.
Well, it just, some of the recipes reminded me of the Mediterranean diet, which a lot of places are kind of touting as, you know, the next, like you said, low fat, high fiber kind of. And I know they suggest alcohol along with it, so I just wondered.
Yeah, I think there was a paper recently out of France that they said patients in France have a lower incidence of heart disease than people in the United States. And they said even though they smoke more and drink more than anyone in the U.S. does, and they attribute, what's interesting, they attributed that to their lifestyles. They said they're so laid back and their stress levels just aren't like ours. I mean, everybody's not a type A personality, and patients take a three-hour lunch break compared to our 10-minute lunch break. And so I thought that was interesting. But I encourage my patients to have a glass of wine here and there with their meals. Even if they only take a sip, just setting that. A lot of times if you set the table and make it look real nice, that'll increase your appetite in itself. That's one thing, a caregiver, or if you want to do something for a friend, just bring their food over and set it all up for them, even if it's in disposable plastic plates. And now they make the disposable or silverware that looks like the real thing, and it's plastic, and you can just throw everything away, because you, the less amount of work you can make for them, the better off they are.
Mm-hmm. And along with, you know, kind of getting someone interested, you mentioned somewhere that apples are a gum stimulator, and I suppose that would help with your taste buds as well as...
Not so much the taste buds, but your gums become real sore mm-hmm. when you're taking some of the drugs, and it's just, it helps. You really don't have a lot of taste buds in the gums. It's more in the oral mucosa, and it's the base of the tongue has most of your taste buds. But it's just good for your gums, because your gums do get sore when you're taking majority of treatments. You get a sore mouth and sore gums.
I'm going to read quickly what some of the ingredients are in the no-bake cookies, but I'll tell people to buy the book if they want to find out how to put it together.
Okay.
There's graham cracker crumbs, old-fashioned oatmeal, sugar, cocoa, skim milk, margarine, reduced-fat peanut butter, and vanilla extract. And when you use reduced-fat ingredients, you always mention that depending on whether you need to gain weight or lose weight, you can change that. So.
Right.
Okay. And you say the cookies are a good source of fiber and protein. Peanuts are a good source of thiamine, niacin, folicin, iron, and magnesium. And folicin, is that related to folic acid, or is that?
Yes.
Okay. That's good. Well, we're just about ready to... Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have something else?
No, I was going to say, my only regret with the book is I didn't put a note under each recipe. That has been one of... I've gotten more feedback from patients. I wish you had written under every recipe. So if I ever do another one, which we are planning another one, because we've got lots of other ideas, suggestions we've gotten from people, but I plan on putting a note in each recipe. Patients tell me they just take the book and read it because they like the information in it, the introduction with each chapter, and that it's real helpful from that standpoint.
Yeah, it's very comprehensive, and all the advice you give and information there, too. We just got a minute. Nope, time to go here. This is... I'd like to thank you, Dr. Militello, one of the authors of Eating Well Through Cancer, which is published by Wimmer Cookbooks. And thank you very much for joining us today. Thanks to Henry Frayne, our board operator, and Harriet Williamson, the executive producer of the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Maeve Riley. Joining us is Todd Gleason. He is today's settlement prices from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Thanks very much, Maeve. From the Chicago Board of Trade this afternoon, futures in the corn, the wheat, and the bean pits all finished lower for the day. The wheat down about a penny and a half, corn down 3 cents, and the beans settled down 9 cents, but they did bounce back from their lows up around three off the top of their lows. So we'll get a chance to talk about that this afternoon a little later when we speak with Kurt Kimball of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, during the closing market report. That comes up after the news at the top of the hour. It's 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Standard Time for the day. From the wheat pit at the Chicago Board of Trade, the high today at 304.5 in the December contract. The low there at $3 even. And their settlement price at 302.5 was down 1.25 for the day. March contract now 316 the high, low at 312.25. Settlement price at 314.75, a penny and a quarter lower and the May futures at 321 and a quarter high, low at 318. Settlement price for the May wheat at 320 and a half, down a half cent for the day. July futures at 326 high, low at 323. They settled at 323 and a half. They were off 2 1/4 for the day. From the corn pit, December futures, 204 and a half, the high, the low at 202 and a half. A settlement price at 202 and 3/4 for the nearby December contract, down 3 1/4 for the day. By the way, the LDP in Champaign County and probably most of the state of Illinois at 31 cents. March corn now, 215 and a half, the high, the low at 213 and a quarter. Settled 213 and 3/4, down 3 1/4. And the May futures, 222 and 3/4, the high, the low at 220 and 3/4, settled 221 and 1/4. They were off 3 cents for the day. July futures, 228 and 3/4, the high, low at 227, a settlement price at 227 and a half, down 2 3/4. And the September contract, a 236 high, low at 234. Settlement price at 234 and a quarter, down 3 1/4. December futures for next year, 244 and a half, the high, the low at 242. Settlement price at 242 and a quarter. They were off 3 1/2 for the day. December oats, a 145 and a half high, low at 140 and 3/4. They settled 142 and 3/4, down a penny and a quarter. In the March contract, 152 and a half on the high side. The low at 148, settlement price there at 150 and a quarter, and they were down 1 1/4 for the day. From the soy complex, bean futures were off 9 1/4 cents at the end of the day in the November contract. Had a high today of 528. Their low at 522, bounced 3 1/4 cents off. That load settled at 525 and a quarter. Once again, they were at 9 1/4 lower at the end of the day. That after traders decided that whether or not the cold weather came into the northern parts of the Midwest and actually ended the growing season for a good portion of that crop, made little difference as the bean crop was far enough along, probably. And there were great yields coming in from all across the Midwest, and that's been putting pressure on the market for some time now. Harvest pressure, that is. January beans at 535, high, low at 529 and a quarter. And their settlement price there, down 9 cents at 533. March futures, 541, the high, the low at 535 and a half. Settled at 539, down 8 3/4. And the May contract, 547, the high, the low at 542. May beans settled 545 and a quarter. They were down 8 1/4 for the day. July contract, 554 and a half high, low at 548. Settlement price at 552, 8 1/4 lower. And the August soybeans for next year, 550 the high, or rather 550 and 1/2 the high. The low at 550 and a settlement price at 551 and a half, down 8 3/4. That high price can't be right, actually. So I'm not quite sure what that number is, but settlement price at 551 and a half, down 8 3/4 in the August beans. Bean meal now, 156.80, the high, the low at 155.60, a settlement price at 155.90, down 180. And December meal, 160.30, the high, the low at 159.10, settled 159.40. They were down 2.30 for the day. October bean oil, 20.72, the high, the low at 20.25, settled 20.69. They were off 8 cents, and the December bean oil, 20.88, the high, the low at 20.38, settled 20.81. They were down 9 cents for the day. Taking a look at what happened at the Mercantile Exchange for the afternoon, the nearby October feeder cattle had a high today of $113.10, their low at $112.10. And their settlement price at $112.90 for the October feeders. They were up 37.5 cents at the end of the day. November futures, 111.47 1/2, the high, the low at 110.35, settled $111.02 1/2, 100 weight, up 82.5 cents. January futures, 107.70 for the high, the low at 106.65, and a settlement price for the January feeder cattle, 107.60. They were up 70 cents at the end of the day. October live cattle, $86.17 1/2, the high, the low at 85.55, and their settlement price at 85.82 1/2 was down a nickel. November futures for the feeder cattle, rather for the live cattle, at $84.05, a low at 83.50, and a settlement price on the high at 84.05. They were down still 95 cents for the day. October lean hog, 75.40, the high, the low at 73.50, settlement price at 73.87 1/2. They were off 87 1/2 cents. And the December futures, 69.25, the high, the low at 66.67 1/2, settled $66.75, 100 weight, down $1.92 1/2. February futures, 68.05, the high, the low at 65.82 1/2. settlement price at 66.32 and a half, and the Feb bellies were off a dollar and a half at the end of the day, or the Feb hogs were off a dollar and a half at the end of the day, and the April lean hogs 64.95 the high, the low at 62.90, settled 63.15, and they were off 1.75. Now the bellies 97.17 and a half, the high settlement price rather, they were up 22 and a half cents today, with a high of 98.50 and a low at 96.10. I'll be back in just a moment to take you through the top of the hour and NPR News.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
This is Les Schulte, Director of Corporate Support. WILL has made a significant commitment to providing area farmers and agribusiness professionals with the best information possible. But we need your support to help continue and grow this service. If you own or manage a business, consider supporting WILL through one of our business programs. Call 217-333-0850 for more information.
Taking a look at the forecast across the two-state region, freeze watches and warnings have been issued overnight, tonight and early tomorrow morning for most of northern and central sections, and frost advisories for the south-central parts of Indiana. Taking a look at forecasts this afternoon, yet mostly sunny, highs today from near 50 in far northwestern Illinois to 75 in southeastern Indiana. Tonight, it'll be clear and cold, some widespread frost and some hard freezes, lows ranging from 26 in northwestern Illinois to 40 in the far south. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs tomorrow ranging from 56 in northeastern Indiana to 68 in the far south. The extended forecast for the two-state region: Wednesday, mostly sunny. Thursday in Indiana, mostly sunny in Illinois, becoming partly to mostly cloudy. A slight chance for showers in northern and central sections.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Eric Hooper from South Lyon, Michigan writes, "Dear Dr. Science, why are there always so many old people at the post office?"
Old people long to remember the days when instant messaging meant 3 days between dropping a letter into the mailbox and having the mailman hand it over. Many lurk at post offices just to feel that lazy 19th century vibe once again. Others prowl the few remaining train stations longing for a whiff of cigar smoke, the hissing of the brakes, and the rumble of the